Welcome, my name is Katarzyna Monika Pawlak. I'm the social media trainee editor of UEG Journal, and you're listening to UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal in order to learn from the most up-to-date evidence and discuss with the authors the relevant findings of their research. Today is December 7th, and this is the 8th episode of the UEG Journal podcast. This time, Iago Rodriguez-Lago, a trainee editor of UEG Journal, will be discussing with Neil Moran on his recent paper entitled Celiac Disease Enteropathy and Symptoms May Be Aggravated by Angiotensin Receptor Blockers in Patients on a Gluten-Free Diet.
Welcome, Neil, to the UEG Journal podcast. And please feel free to introduce yourself and your research group.
Well, thank you, Iago, and thank you for having me. My name is Neil O'Moran. I am from Dublin in Ireland, and I'm a specialist registrar in gastroenterology and hepatology with Royal College of Physicians in Ireland. So in Ireland, we have a national program for training, and therefore we rotate between regions of the country during our training. So I'm currently working in St. Vincent's University Hospital in Dublin, and I'm completing a doctoral thesis in novel biomarkers in colorectal cancer screening based in the Center of Colorectal Disease. 2 years ago, I was working in the west of Ireland in Galway University Hospital with Professor Valerie Burns, who is our national celiac expert and who was the senior author on this paper. So working with Professor Burns, I developed a keen interest in the assessment of non-responsive or non-healing celiac disease, as well as true refractory celiac disease. I suppose that's kind of was the genesis of this study.
Perfect. Thank you. I think that gives us a great overview about your situation and the background of the study. And going to the specific data on your paper and your recent research about celiac disease, why did you start this study and why drove you to this clinical question?
So in Galway, Professor Burns runs a large tertiary referral celiac clinic where many complex celiac patients in Ireland, including non-responsive and refractory celiac patients, are managed. So we know that the incidence of celiac disease is increasing over time. And in fact, the true incidence is probably greater than we know, as many patients can have silent or asymptomatic celiac disease. Our own epidemiological studies and data in Ireland confirm that patients diagnosed as adults are presenting at a later stage and often with non-classical symptoms. So what was once considered a disease of the young, we now understand to be a disease of all age groups. And actually, patients can be diagnosed quite late in life, even up to the 77th and 8th decade. Of course, older patients may have more complications at diagnosis, compounded by age-related factors. And older patients often have other comorbidities and sometimes have quite long medication lists, and this might pose a challenge. So we now know that certain antihypertensive medication, in particular angiotensin receptor antagonists, can cause an enteropathy, and that can mimic celiac disease. In fact, a former graduate of Galway University, Professor Joseph Murray, who now works in the Mayo Clinic in the US, was the first to recognize this phenomenon. He had a group of patients with chronic diarrhea and enteropathy, but negative serology. And they were initially classified as refractory celiac patients. And in fact, some of them went on to receive immunosuppressive therapy. But they discovered that, in fact, this group of patients were all taking olmesartan, which is one of the first angiotensin receptor antagonists, and all recovered, so symptoms completely resolved upon cessation of the medication. So that's kind of where we got the idea of looking at our enteropathy and its impact in celiac patients. I suppose it's fair to say we've observed with symptoms, whose symptoms or histology don't or fail to resolve in spite of strict adherence to gluten-free diet. Of course, in this instance, it's important to investigate other causes for persistent symptoms, including concomitant irritable bowel, bacterial overgrowth, etc. now, I suppose, with what we've learned from the our enteropathy, it's important to continue this. And I suppose we noticed a number of patients, and two in particular, of our celiac patients who were on treated with angiotensin receptor blockers. In fact, one was the mother of one of our junior doctors. And they'd had a number of hospital admissions in the previous year, presenting with nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and weight loss. And it turns out that their symptoms resolved completely when we stopped the ARB medication. Of course, in hindsight, we wondered, well, could this patient actually have had an ARB enteropathy and not true celiac? But reviewing this serology kind of showed a very significantly elevated TTG, positive EMA, at diagnosis, and that was about 18 months beforehand. So that led us to think about the effect of angiotensin receptor blockers on patients with celiac disease. And we wondered, did they have the same effect as non-celiac patients, or was this just an isolated observation and it had no effect at all? Or what? And what was the significance of this? So could ARB enteropathy or ARB therapy in celiac patients actually confuse the picture and result in a non-responsive picture? Or could this actually be mistaken for a case of refractory celiac? So I suppose that is what was what stimulated our interest and caused us to look at the study.
Great. And thank you so much, because that gave us a fantastic overview about how you reach to this point. And this is very important for us, because the gluten-related disorders are increasingly observed in our clinics. And so how did you approach this problem and this research question? How did you perform your study?
We performed a retrospective single center case control study. So we searched through our patient records, and we looking at all patients who attended the celiac clinic over a 10-year period. So from January 2010 to May 2019. And that was a total of over 1,100 patients. We then kind of laboriously went through searches of clinical encounters, clinic letters, GP letters, and medication lists, as well as hospital discharges, described any of the angiotensin receptor antagonist medication. And after that search, we found a total of 59 patients that fit that criteria. Of course, some patients attending our clinic were referred with symptoms that were suggestive of celiac, but in fact turned out to have an ARB enteropathy, confirmed with cessations of medication. So we had to ensure that we excluded those from analysis. So to differentiate and to identify the true bona fide celiac patients, we reviewed serology, looking both at their TTG and EMA, and histopathology based on the Marsh criteria. And we found 40 patients who fit the criteria of true celiac disease, treated with a concomitant A or B. So then we collected data on these 40 patients. We looked at disease-related data, such as their disease duration, compliance with the gluten-free diet. We looked at their reported symptoms, and the main symptoms we looked at were diarrhea, abdominal pain, and weight loss, and also surrogate markers of absorption. So we looked at vitamin B, iron levels, calcium, and hemoglobin. We also looked at their initial serology, histopathology, and their most recent histology and serology follow-up. So then, it was a relatively small number. So to strengthen our findings, and to reduce bias for this estimated treatment effect, we matched these 40 patients with age and sex, by age and sex, with other celiac patients who had never been treated with an ARB. We did that in a 1-to-2 ratio. So we also matched closely with comparable duration of disease and compliance with gluten-free diet. Of course, assessing compliance with gluten-free diet is often quite difficult. There are some patient-reported outcomes that can be used. We kind of relied on patient-reported symptoms. And, you know, initially I was quite taken that our comparable rates or our rates of gluten-free compliance were quite relatively low, I suppose, for strict compliance, about 50-55%. Now, they actually were comparable across the two groups, and it does actually similar rates have been found in other kind of large studies. I suppose that is one of the aspects that can complicate studies.
Great. And so your main findings and your main conclusions, can you give us some ideas about your main results, please?
Yeah, thanks, Iago. I mean, I think we had some interesting findings from the study. Firstly, the mean age of patients included was 66.2 years, and with 63% female. So the mean duration of disease was, so these patients were diagnosed kind of later in life. They didn't have a very long duration. And they probably were of that cohort that were at risk of having other comorbidities, most notably hypertension and possibly treated. So we found that persistent symptoms, so again, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and weight loss, were more commonly reported in the celiac patients who were taking angiotensin receptor blockers. So we found persistent symptoms in 25% of these, and that compared with only 9% of our controls. And that gave us a significant p-value of 0.018. We also found that these patients had lower rates of complete mucosal healing, or MARSH zero. And that was only found in 36% of our ARB group compared with 55% of controls. And again, that p-value was significant at 0.04. We looked then at some subgroup analysis, looking at the different types of angiotensin receptor blockers. Most of the data known about ARB enteropathy has been related to olmesartan. But there have been smaller case reports and case series using other ARBs such as telmisartan, candesartan, and valsartan. Again, we found olmesartan was the most commonly prescribed ARB. But looking at subgroup analysis, there really was no difference in the effect of the ARB. The only signal was we noted lower vitamin D levels in patients in olmesartan treated patients. And again, that gave a significant p-value. Interestingly, we demonstrated a low level of positive serology in both our groups. So 6% in controls, 10% in the AA group. It had previously been noted that patients presenting with ARB enteropathy generally had negative serology. And some case studies have suggested positive serology in the use of other ARBs in ARB enteropathy. There was very low positivity in our rate. So I suppose this suggests that the enteropathy didn't seem to be driven by a TTG-induced response, or at least, or perhaps was in association with a TTG response. So I think they were the main findings of our study.
Thank you so much, because the findings and all the interpretation of these results are really, really interesting. But my question is, okay, so now how can we apply this to our clinic and our patients with celiac disease, or how do you approach this problem in your clinic, for example?
Well, I think, firstly, a very simple measure is we should avoid using this class of antihypertensive agent in our celiac patients, particularly being mindful of those older patients who possibly are diagnosed later or who have a long history of disease but will over time develop comorbidities. Hypertension is a common comorbidity, and angiotensin receptors are commonly prescribed medications. So important to be aware of the possible interaction and to avoid them. I think that is increasingly important as we are diagnosing more celiac patients in the age group that would develop hypertension. We should also consider the possibility of concurrent ARB enteropathy in our celiac patients who present with persistent symptoms or are considered as a non-healing or non-responsive celiac. So we should do a thorough review of their medication list, and that's something that we've incorporated as part of our assessment. Any patient who presents with persistent symptoms or has non-healing mucosa, to really ensure that they're not taking an ARB medication. And often, patients might not have the list of medication, the name of medication, but even at times contacting their GP or contacting the pharmacy just to make sure exactly what medication they're on. can make a simple change. And possibly then, you know, we kind of wonder, should we advise caution in the use of angiotensin receptor blockers in first-degree relatives of our celiac patients? So we know they carry the same genetic profile. And while the exact mechanism of action or exact cause of the ARB enteropathy is not understood, we do know that there's a higher incidence in patients who carry the HLA DQ2, DQ8 allele. So possibly we should advise caution in the use of ARBs in these patients.
That's really interesting. And I think that we should look into that in the future, because there are many questions still open. And do you have any ideas or any plans to continue this line of research? Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yes, so I suppose now this has kind of created a few more thoughts and ideas for us. I suppose one question, you know, kind of leading from that last comment I made about first-degree relatives is, you know, can treatment with an angiotensin receptor possibly precipitate celiac in a patient with a genetic predisposition? That is a big unknown. And then for the celiac cohort, you know, can, the concurrent use of ARB precipitate a refractory type celiac? And I suppose, you know, these are ideas that have come from clinical encounters and patients that we have met. And recently we had a patient referred to us from the south of Ireland, again, who presented with symptoms suggestive of celiac, with dramatic weight loss, diarrhea, complete villus atrophy and raised intraepithelial lymphocytes, with no family history and serology negative, and started on a gluten-free diet with some improvement, but then presented a short period later in acute renal failure from a pre-renal, from volume loss, and again was treated with IV steroids. And then, you know, when we actually looked back on the medication list and did a thorough investigation, we found that this patient was taking an angiotensin receptor. And once that was stopped, the patient improved. Now, interestingly, that patient's son subsequently was diagnosed with bona fide celiac disease based on serology and histology. So there's certainly a link between ARB enteropathy and genetic predisposition. I suppose another idea we have is to look at how many patients were actually on, particularly in this cohort, angiotensin receptors at the time of diagnosis. So I suppose it wouldn't be much of an issue for younger patients because it's very uncommon for younger patients to be treated with antihypertensive medication. But perhaps someone in their fifth or sixth decade of life, could this possibly have triggered celiac disease? And I suppose our understanding, you know, still there are some gaps in our understanding. And we wonder why somebody in their fifth or sixth or seventh decade of life have suddenly developed celiac disease when, you know, possibly they may have had, you know, silent disease for a period before, but perhaps this extra insult or the first hit that has caused this gluten-mediated immune injury could possibly have been triggered by the ARB. One of my colleagues in Galway has been looking at our non-healing celiac group and looking at other medications to see, well, could this, you know, could there be other medications that possibly could precipitate celiac or precipitate these symptoms? He did a nice study and actually was presented recently at the UEG as a poster, looking at a logistic regression. He showed that a significant percentage of patients were treated with SSRIs in our non-healing group. Now, initially we thought perhaps this is because these patients had low mood, are perhaps less adherent to their gluten-free diet. But actually, we were able to show that the link was independent of mood, probably related to the SSRI. So I suppose that there's a couple of areas for us to work on, and we'll continue. We also want to look back on this group of 40 patients that were on ARBs who have obviously now stopped, and kind of look at a follow-on, perhaps 1 year or 2 year, to to see, you know, has it been any impact on their outcome?
It seems that there's a lot of work in this type of gluten related disorders, and I think that you gave us a great idea of the future and how can we try to counsel our patients or their relatives also in the future. So thank you so much, Neil, for joining us during this interview and this podcast. And it will be a pleasure to see more results on this topic from you and your group in the UGG Journal or the UGG Week. So thank you so much. See you on the next episode.
Thanks, Iago. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
We hope that you enjoyed this interview, and please subscribe for further updates. Thank you and see you again.